This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Shady's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, takeaways from last night's playoff action in the NBA. Quarterbacks at the most pressure. We'll talk with a member of the Charleston Battery in about 15 minutes. And also, a portion of the golf world. I'm not going to put it on the whole golf world, but a portion continues to embarrass themselves. Get to that coming up on the Morrow Midday Show here over the final hour. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And you can find the podcast online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. You can always get in touch with the show by going to charlestonsportsradio.com, clicking on our show page, leave a comment there. Plus, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text line always open, 843-608-1734. And you can always join the conversation on the phones as well, 843-721-9500. Don't forget, 2022 Summer Golf Tour set to begin next week. Foursome will go on sale Monday morning, bright and early, as always, for the links at Stono Ferry next week. A foursome for $98.9. $98.90. Go over to charlestonsportsradio.com after the weekend next week to get your foursome. These things go like hotcakes. It takes they sell out within like 15 minutes every week. So what is it, 8 a.m.? Is that when it goes on sale? Do you know?
8 a.m., yes. Yep. Set your alarms, folks.
That's right. They go quick. So 8 a.m. on Monday after the weekend. We're giving you as many reminders as we can so that you can't blame us afterwards. These foursomes go quick. Next week, it's the links at Stono Ferry. It'll go on over the next 10 weeks all the way till August, and it starts next week. Summer is here, even if it doesn't always feel like it every day. It was a little brisk this morning. But go prepare yourself. Set your alarm. Put it in the calendar. Do what you got to do to make sure you're alert and ready to go next Monday morning for the links at Stono Ferry on May 16th, the start of our 2022 Summer Golf Tour. Now, that's an easy transition while we're on the subject of golf. Greg Norman made some ridiculous comments. And this is all still about this whole Saudi-backed, now it went from a tour to just events. For Greg, he was talking about, I'm trying to find the exact quote here because it was so ridiculous. They were talking about the murder of that journalist, Jamal. And it was really an execution. And Greg Norman said, quote, "Look, we've all made mistakes." That was the quote. As if, like, who amongst us hasn't executed somebody before? We grow, right? We've all made mistakes and have gotten better and have grown from these experiences. What kind of response is that? That, hey, look, especially I love that he says, look, to begin. Like, look, we've all made mistakes. Oh, okay. That's what it was. It was just a mistake. Sorry. They executed somebody. It was a mistake. They regret it. We've all moved on. It's okay. Except the family who lost a loved one and has to live with that the rest of their day or the rest of their lives. I'm sure they view it as, it was just a mistake. Can you blame them? If it was just a mistake, we call that, what, manslaughter? This was an execution. There's no mistake made when you execute somebody, not let alone all the other things that have gone on. Now, look, Phil Mickelson's his comments. I'll be honest with you. I think Phil's taken a lot of heat for what he said. Now, what he said wasn't great. It wasn't smart. It wasn't the best thing to say. I also think it wasn't as bad as some people may make it out to believe. What Mickelson was saying in his wording and his messages was, I don't care the terrible things they've done. I just care more about making money. And if we're being honest, I think a lot of people would say something similar. In fact, the NBA has said something similar by continuing to, you know, keep their mouth shut and punish Daryl Morey when he spoke out about what was going on in China, because they make a lot of money in the country of China. So they don't want to say anything about whatever may be happening over there. Essentially telling you, the NBA, they don't care what's going on in that country as long as they're making money from that country. Mickelson was essentially saying the same thing. Look, I know they do terrible things, but I'm just going to look the other way because they're about to pay me a lot of money. Was it great? No, of course not, what Mickelson said. Should he have said it? No, obviously he's learned that the hard way. Now, you probably shouldn't have put that out publicly. You could tell people behind closed doors, and his excuse, right, he thought it was a behind-closed-door conversation with a journalist. The journalist then put it out there, makes Mickelson look bad. I think this is much worse. To just write it off as, hey, we all make mistakes. I mean, that's ridiculous. From Greg Norman, who is like the ringleader, right? He's leading the whole thing here in this, whatever they call it, the LIV Golf Invitational Series. This is his puppy here. I think it's silly. And it goes back to something I was talking about yesterday with, oh, these golfers complaining. What are you complaining about? Sergio Garcia complaining about some of the rules. You're making millions to go golf for a couple of days a week throughout the year. You think you got it so bad? Right? Like, we do plenty of complaining around here. A lot of it's tongue-in-cheek, right? But, like, put it in perspective. You think I understand that I don't have it bad. Are you kidding? I have it great. I get to talk about sports for a living. We'll complain on air about certain things. It's never all that serious. I have it Sergio talking about, I can't wait till I get out of here. Let me go join that tour with those Saudi Arabians. Oh, that'll be so much better. It's embarrassing, these golfers. And Greg Norman's the latest example. Asked about, what's going on over there. Asked about the execution of a journalist who spoke out against the country. And the response was, look, we've all made mistakes. What does that even mean? What are you? That's not a mistake. What are you talking about? Ridiculous. That's what you say if somebody gets in trouble at school, I guess. Your kid gets in trouble at school, and it's not something too serious. He did something dumb, like kids would, right? Like, it's okay, right? We all make mistakes, just learn from it. Not when you commit a murder, do you say to somebody like, hey, you know what? It's okay, we all make mistakes. Problem is, that mistake, you can't do anything about it. You cost somebody their life, it affects the whole family, the loved ones, everything. You took someone's life away, that's a big decision. That's not a mistake. Certainly not when it's execution style. You thought about it. You knew what you were doing. There's no mistake there. This whole thing's embarrassing. And for Greg Norman to say, we all make mistakes. I don't think most of us have made mistakes like that. But sure, right? Go make your money, because typically that's all we care about. And we're all at the point where we've all made decisions based on money. But this is just such a slap in the face to make it so apparent. Like, I don't care how bad they are. I'm going to tell you, it's just a mistake what they did. Because we're going to get more money off of it. It's ridiculous. It happens all the time in business or sports. Just don't make it so obvious. Don't make it so offensive. Don't slap us in the face showing us that you truly don't care about anything other than the money you're about to make. We know that's how things work, but don't be so obvious. Don't be so offensive about it. Especially when you're talking about a murder in this case. And saying, we all make mistakes. You live and you learn. I mean, come on. Ridiculous. Greg Norman, with your joke of a comment. With that, let me transition to the NBA action last night. We'll catch up with a member of the Charleston Battery in a few moments. But last night, we had two games in the NBA. The Bucks pulled off an incredible comeback in the final 2 minutes, got a huge win. And the Warriors got embarrassed by a Ja Morant-less Grizzlies. For the Bucks-Celtics, it's something we discussed yesterday. These teams that have the DNA of a champion, that know what to do in these moments, going up against teams that don't. And this was the one series that I wasn't sure about. I know the Bucks have the DNA of a champion because they won last year, but I wasn't sure if there's a huge mismatch in that category with the Celtics. Whereas these other series, right, Miami was in the championship 2 years ago, Philly's never gotten out of the second round. Phoenix was in the championship last year, Dallas has never gotten to the second round until this year. The Warriors have won a bunch of championships. The Grizzlies, this is the first time they're in the second round. Clear mismatch. For the Bucks-Celtics, yeah, sure, the Celtics haven't been to a finals with this group, but we thought this was the time they were ready to take that step forward. Meanwhile, the Bucks, the defending champs from a year ago. It turns out the Celtics were not ready. They were up 14 in the fourth quarter last night at home in the biggest game of their season. They were up 6 in the final 2 minutes at home in the biggest game of their season. They let it slip away. And the Bucks, it was also how the Bucks did it. Sure, the Bucks went 6 for 6 from beyond the arc. You could say, they just caught fire. There's not much you could do about that. But look at the offensive rebounding. The Bucks had, twice as many offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter compared to this. They killed them on the glass. And I'll always say on this show, anytime I'm talking basketball, on the air, off the air, rebounding is just about effort. Dennis Rodman was not talented whatsoever, but he was a great rebound. Why? Because he just he just wanted it more than anybody else. Rebounding is just simply effort. Even when you have a size mismatch, you could box a guy out. I remember going to basketball camp as a kid, and the coaches would always show you, right? You have to do it right at the kneecaps. You box them out. You put your behind right in their knees, and you drive them out of the lane. You could box out. Don't tell me size. Don't tell me whether they're just a bigger team. That's irrelevant, too. Rebounding is all about the effort, and the Bucks just wanted it more. And the way they executed down the stretch, that was embarrassing for the Celtics in the biggest game of the year. So it goes back to what I was discussing yesterday. Teams that know how to win these games going up against teams that haven't learned just yet. And we got our answer last night. I was pondering it on the show yesterday. We got the answer last night. The Celtics still are not ready. They don't know just yet how to win these types of games. They blew another game earlier in the series. Otherwise, they already have the series won. The Bucks, meanwhile, they know how to win games like this. Now, when it comes to the Grizzlies-Warriors last night and that blowout, I think the Warriors will respond at home in Game 6 and put away the Grizzlies to win the series. I don't take too much away from it, but it is a little bit of a troubling sign that the Grizzlies have looked this good without Ja Morant against the Warriors and that the Warriors got blown out that bad. Second worst loss in the playoffs for the Warriors in over 50 years. Shows you that while they are still really talented and one of the best teams in the league and maybe should still be the championship favorite, they're not quite as strong as they were a couple years ago when they were actually winning championships. There's also a storyline in there about the Grizzlies playing better without Ja Morant. What does that mean? I don't know. I think you'd still rather have Ja on the floor. But also for the Warriors, I'm curious how this plays out because it's kind of semantics. It's just fun with numbers. But as I shared earlier, no team has ever won an NBA championship after losing by 40 points in a playoff game. Only two have ever made it to the finals. But the Warriors didn't lose by 40. They lost by 39. And the difference of that 1 point may be big because the Bucks lost by 39 in a playoff game last year and went on to win the championship. So it's just 1 point. Maybe it really doesn't mean anything. But based off of the stat, right, if you saw last night and thought, wow, that's embarrassing, right? Maybe the Warriors aren't that good. It doesn't disqualify them from being able to win a championship. The Bucks had a night like that last year, still went on to win the championship. To me, for that game last night, it was a one-off. The Warriors were up 3-1. They were on the road. Grizzlies maybe wanted it more. I think Golden State at home, game 6, just got embarrassed. I think they'll put the series away tomorrow. That's one of the things I love. You know, we're going to get the NFL schedule tonight. It's from a betting perspective. I always love betting on a team that got embarrassed the week prior because these are professionals with a lot of pride. The games are on national TV. Everyone's watching. You don't think the Warriors are embarrassed today? I know Draymond Green was dancing around and, you know, celebrating with the Grizzlies crowd, having fun, went home and recorded a podcast. I still think they care. In the NFL, if you ever see a team get blown out, especially if it's on Monday Night Football, right, it's national TV, bet on them the following week. They're going to come out hungry. I think the same thing here. The Warriors got embarrassed last night. That was awful. I think they come back and put it away in the next game at home. All four series right now, 3-2. We'll see how many of them go the distance in the NBA playoffs. When we come back, we'll chat with a member of the Charleston Battery. They're at home this weekend. It's been a while since we've caught up with a member of the Battery. We'll break it all down, check in, see how the Battery are doing when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Typically on Thursdays, we catch up with a member of the Charleston Battery. And we do so again today. The Battery are back home Saturday night against New Mexico United. This Saturday, May 14th, 2 days from now, 7 p.m. start. Get your tickets online at charlestonbattery.com. You hear me talk about the games all the time. It's always fun to go to these games. And the Battery are home. They're home the next two Saturdays. So get your tickets, whether for this weekend or next weekend, to go support the Battery out at Patriots Point. Always a fun time. You don't even have to be a huge soccer fan. It's fun just to be out there and watch them play and enjoy the environment. Get your tickets online, charlestonbattery.com, as we catch up with a member of the Battery typically on Thursdays most weeks. And we're joined now by one of the forwards of the team as Aiden Apodaca's with us. Aiden, did I say that correctly, that last name?
Yep, that was it.
All right, perfect. I was worried about that. Hey, appreciate you joining us. Let's dive right in.
Yeah,
how have things gone for you so far? How has the season been for you so far here playing with the Battery this year?
You know, collectively, it's been a rough start, but we're working hard to get things back on track and put some numbers back in the win column.
Yeah, certainly. I know the season hasn't gone as planned, like you said, as everyone has hoped. It's a long year, though, but, you know, when you start like this as a player, how do you make sure to keep a good, you know, attitude and mental headspace that even through these struggles, you know, you guys are going to see the other side? How do you try to handle some of the tough times as an athlete?
That just goes back to work during the week, you know, every day bringing the right mentality, right amount of effort in each training and in each practice and doing our things, you know, outside of the game field and putting it all together on the weekends.
Now, I know it's your first year with the Battery, but so far through this season, what have you seen as maybe that issue that has led to things led to the season not getting off to the start as you had hoped? What has been one or two of the biggest issues so far, you feel?
I think we have a lot of new faces, you know, that goes for the players and as well as the coaching staff. So getting everything to kind of click is obviously going to take some time, and we knew that coming into the season.
Yeah, certainly. We talk a lot for all sports about that continuity and trying to make things gel. Do you feel like as the season has gone along, right, you guys are getting more on the same page as the year has gone on so far?
Definitely. You know, I think our little week and a half break, we sorted some things out and we made some progress in a way of our soccer identity. So I think that's helped a lot, and we're just, you know, putting it all together and the pieces will fall.
I know, again, you know, the wins haven't been as frequent as you would like, but personally, for you, how have you felt things have gone so far this year?
What was that? Sorry, again?
Just on a personal level, for you, how have you felt like things have gone for you personally so far this year out there?
I think I've done a good job adjusting, but obviously the most important thing is you know, helping the team get wins, and that's I think that's on everybody's minds at this point.
How have you enjoyed so far this year playing in Charleston with the Battery, your first year here? How have you just enjoyed, you know, the team, the fans, the stadium, being in the area? How has that gone?
It's been good. You know, the guys welcomed me with open arms and you know, very welcoming to me. And I've enjoyed the city and I've enjoyed the weather.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, you're originally from California. I know you've bounced around, I'm sure, like most guys have throughout your career already. You wind up here in Charleston. Let me first ask you, how did this come to be? How did it come for how did you wind up with the Charleston Battery this year when you signed with them in January? What was that process like leading you here to the Lowcountry?
You know, just kind of exploring my options after the previous year. So, you know, spent my time this off season, you know, putting my head down to working, and the pieces, you know, they fell together, and I'm happy to be in Charleston.
You spent some time last year with the Orange County Soccer Club. As mentioned, you're from California. How have you liked just the area away from soccer? How do you like the Charleston area and being here this year?
You know, it's very different from being from California. Obviously, not as populated, and definitely not nearly as many buildings, but no, I've enjoyed it. You know, being close to the beaches, being close to the coast, it's something I enjoy.
You mentioned the beaches. Do you surf? Do you do anything in the water? Growing up in California, when you go to the beach, what do you do?
Oh, I'm not quite that avid in the water, but you know, just relaxing. You know, spending time. You know, walking along the shore and just you know, the sights.
Yeah, certainly so. The Charleston Battery, they're back home Saturday. Get your tickets online, charlestonbattery.com. For you, again, you know, you've bounced around. You played in various places. Even when you go on the road, you go in a bunch of different stadiums, arenas. You see a lot of different environments. What's it been like for the home games? How have you felt, you know, playing in front of the home crowd, playing at Patriots Point? What has that experience been like for you this year?
It's been great. You know, having everybody, you know, support us and push us on, we definitely feel the energy out there, and we appreciate everybody that's that's able to come out. And next time everybody does, you know, bring a friend, and we'd love to have more people out there and, you know, keep rooting for us as we put things together and, you know, start getting on a roll.
When you came and, you know, came to play with the Battery, you were reunited with a former teammate in A.J. Patterson. When you join a new team, like, how important is it to have some sort of familiarity when you're coming into a new situation like you did this year?
Oh, I think it's huge. You know, A.J. definitely is one of the guys that helped me settle in and, you know, who took me along and, you know, and that opened up the other friendships and with my newer teammates and, you know, allowed us to mesh really quickly together.
When you, you know, as you said, a lot of moving pieces with the team this year. So are road trips beneficial? Like, how do you get to know one each other, not only on the soccer field, but even personally, become friends, get to know each other off the field? Is it the road trips? Is it off days, spending time with one another? How do you as an athlete on a new team, really make sure you get to know these guys?
A lot of it is having you know a healthy locker room where guys can you know freely mess around with each other or be friendly with one another or you know it's given us time to in the locker room it's pretty healthy and everybody in there is welcoming and everybody in there has been friendly with each other and that's where I think most of our relationships have grown is within the locker room.
So I mentioned you know the connection with AJ from Bethlehem. You played. You're from California. You went to school in California. You've played in a lot of warm climates: California, Texas. Now here in South Carolina, what was it like to be playing in Pennsylvania? Was that a bit of a maybe like a culture shock for you?
It definitely was. I remember I also played in Reno, and those two definitely get a bit of snow. So my first trainings out there were. Definitely some getting used to and some adapting. So,
was that the first time you had ever seen snow, or growing up had you experienced it?
Oh no, I've experienced snow before, but I don't think to that extent.
Yeah. Do you prefer the warm weather and what you have around here in California?
Definitely, warm weather is definitely preferred.
Yeah, I can imagine so. What about as a soccer player? If it's warm and you're out there playing like this, compared to maybe if it's a little cooler in, as you said, Reno or Bethlehem, do you prefer even warm weather for soccer? Being out there running around when it's hot out, is that more preferable for a soccer player?
Honestly, any weather's preferred. As long as, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be on the team and be kicking the ball around during the weekdays and on the weekends. So you know, any weather, it doesn't matter, rain or shine, I'm happy to be out there, and I prefer any weather's preferred.
Yeah, you certainly sound passionate about the sport. What was it growing up? What led to you to play soccer specifically and now, you know, have a professional career growing up? What was it that led to you and the sport soccer coming together?
Definitely my family. You know, from a young age, I think my family really pushed me and helped me realize and helped push me to understand that I could, you know, have a future in the sport. And that went on through, you know, middle school, high school, college, and still now, you know, my family's my number one support. So I'm happy to have them behind me and happy to keep going.
Is it tough to be, you know, on the other side of the country from California where you grew up and where your family, you know, may still be?
What was that? Sorry.
Is it just tough to be, you know, in South Carolina? You're from California. As you said, your family's been a great support system. Is it tough to, you go play in Pennsylvania, you go play in Texas. Is it tough to have to, you know, move away from home and play on the other side of the country for some of these teams?
Definitely. But you know, it's my fifth year, so I've gotten pretty used to it. But it's definitely not the easiest at times. So it's always happy. I'm always happy to, you know, go back in off season and be home.
Now I know you have a birthday coming up. It's during the season. And it's not like it's, you know, an 18th birthday, a 21st. Once you get to a certain age, you don't really look forward to your birthday so much.
Right.
Do we have any special plans for the birthday coming up later on this month?
My girlfriend's in town, so I'm happy to be spending it with her and happy to, you know, have someone here and we're going to explore our options.
There you go. Hey, that's all you need. The Battery play Saturday against New Mexico United at Patriots Point. Get your tickets online at charlestonbattery.com. The Battery are home the next two Saturdays. Aiden, let us in here on the secret sauce. What do we need to see Saturday night for you guys against New Mexico United? What are you looking for from your guys to get back out there in the winning ways Saturday against New Mexico?
That's just everybody competing for one another, you know, battling for the guy next to you with the guy next to you and, you know, just putting in a collective effort and everybody doing their job and doing it well.
Well, Aiden, appreciate the time. We wish you the best of luck throughout this season. Hopefully you guys go out there and get a W Saturday against New Mexico United, and appreciate you joining us. Happy early birthday and have a great rest of the season.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey,
have a good one.
Yeah, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Aiden Apodaca from the Charleston Battery, one of their forwards. Appreciate him joining us. The Battery, look, it's been a tough year, but it's still a long year. We're still early enough in this whole thing. You could turn it around, and they play at home Saturday against New Mexico United, and then next Saturday at home against the Miami FC. So get your tickets now at charlestonbattery.com and head on out there and support them and help them get back into the win column. Appreciate the time from Aiden. Yeah, it's something we talk about a lot, though, in sports, and we're seeing it right here firsthand with the Battery that – when you have these moving pieces, it can take a little time. So if we connect that to earlier conversations, that's my biggest concern for like a USC or even a Miami in college football. I don't know if they're going to hit right away in the first year. But I think Lincoln Riley at USC, I think, is a home run. I think Mario Cristobal at Miami is a home run. I just don't know if it's going to be immediate. You're bringing a new coach. In the case of USC, new quarterback, right? New whole coaching staff. A lot of new players. USC has really used the transfer portal. Miami, they had a good recruiting class. You're bringing in a lot of new guys, new faces. And in college football, of course, as you know, right, you lose one game, that changes your whole season. So you can't you got to be ready to go week one, year one. You got to hit it. You can't get off to a little bit of a slow start or learn on the fly or we haven't gelled yet. In college football, you don't have that buffer zone. So that's my one concern for teams like that I think over the course of his career, Lincoln Riley will be very successful in California. I think Mario Cristobal is going to be very successful in Southern Florida. But right away, first year, I don't know. It's hard to come in and win immediately. Urban Meyer's done it everywhere, right? But even Nick Saban. Took Nick Saban 2 years at Alabama. You know, it takes most coaches a couple of years to get you going. Usually it's that third year for college coaches. So to try to relate the Battery and what they're going through to college football and what we were talking about earlier, that's the only reason why I pause right now for USC, Miami. Maybe even if you want to say a Venables at Oklahoma, if you think he's going to do big things there, if you like that fit. You know, year one, it's difficult. Maybe more credit goes to Shane Beamer last year for the Gamecocks, who you saw it, though, last year at South Carolina, where they were much better second half of the season than the first half. So, you know, you have to be cautious of what you expect that first year, which on the flip side is why I have talked myself into NC State, because they are bringing everybody back. They have more returnees last year than anybody in the conference, and they already won 9 games last year. So that's what I look forward to or look at when I look at certainly in college football. How much turnover are you going through? And the teams that bring it back, we did this on the show a couple weeks ago, right? The last four national champions checked the 3 boxes. Same quarterback, same coordinator, same head coach. They kept things constant. They were familiar with one another, just like you at your job, right? If you're working with the same people for the last 5 years, you don't even have to talk with one another. You're all on the same page. You know what you got to do. When you bring in 3 new employees, a whole new sales staff, right, and you're all getting to know one each other at the same time while trying to do a good job, you're just not as efficient as when you get to that point where you know each other so well that you pick up on just the physical cues. You don't even have to talk. You don't have to even even get your point across. They already know what they need to do or what the deal is. Anyways, a whole tangent based off of the Battery struggles. Appreciate the time from Aiden, and hopefully the Battery go out there and get a win on Saturday, and hopefully you're there to see it. Get your tickets online. They're home the next 2 Saturdays. When we come back, we get the NFL schedule coming out tonight. Now, Trent referenced earlier this afternoon that video from Tua, or really the Dolphins on Twitter, with Tua throwing a deep ball to Tyreek Hill. That wasn't maybe as deep as it should have been. So we'll take the NFL schedule release. We'll take this video from the Dolphins. We'll put it all together, and we come back. Quarterbacks under the most pressure this year in the NFL. On the eve of the schedule. We'll do it next. It's more Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday. Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I sure don't want to hurt no one. I'm a picker, I'm a grinner.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Got a lot of pack in before we leave here on a Thursday. Coming up, quarterbacks with the most pressure on them this year in the NFL. And I realized that we never actually got to the audio earlier. I've been teasing it all afternoon. A compliment paid to the Gamecocks. We'll play that in just a few moments. There are certain things that I have been preaching, I guess you could say, for years. Certain thoughts that I've had for a long time. Such as, get rid of divisions. I've been saying this long before this conversation started this past week, last couple of years. Divisions make no sense in these college football conferences. The Big 12, they're the ones, they got it right. And now this week, right, it looks like we're moving towards an area here where in the next 2 years we're going to get rid of divisions in college football. I'm all for it. I love it. This is another one. I've always said, look, I love baseball. I do not get midweek baseball games in college baseball. I would say, this is going to sound sacrilegious, I would rather have no game than a midweek game. Because to me, the midweek game is not entertaining. It's not good baseball. I broadcasted the Citadel-Winthrop game the other night. It's a bullpen game. None of these college teams have enough pitchers to work in the midweek. So you just throw – Winthrop pitched a guy who threw one-third of an inning all year, and he was making the start the other night. That's how desperate they were. Like, we need a pitcher. This guy's pitched once. All right, you go out there and you start. And they used, like, nine different pitchers. And for the Citadel, they had to use a reliever. Right? You don't have enough starters. It's silly. The idea that you put all these teams, and I guess it's a level playing field because everyone's going through it. But think about that. You're not putting your teams in the best position to succeed, and you're not putting the best product out there either. And I know, right, the retort would probably be, well, we got to get these games in. I don't care. I think the Citadel's played 12 midweek games. I'll be honest with you. I think it's a better product. I'd rather play 12 less games. Play weekends only. And if you want, turn them into four-game series on the weekend. And you can tell me about these kids. They got to be in class, yada, yada, yada. I've worked with programs, all right? And when I was in college, one of the basketball players was in my class. The amount of times I saw him in class, I could count on less than one hand, and he got a better grade than me. And I don't think he did anything. So I don't want to hear about, they got to be in class. And come on, we know how this works. So if you want, go to a four-game series on the weekends. Do Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Leave a day earlier if you really want to. How much work are they getting done when they have a midweek game anyways? Just move it. And you may say, well, that's the same idea, right? They don't have four pitchers. All right, then maybe that's not the solution. But my point being, the reason why I go on this rant is because Texas A&M just canceled another midweek game. I guess they've done this twice now. And their coach was very honest. And he said, look, conference games are more important. And this time of year, we don't think we're in a position where we can handle a midweek game and get ready for big conference games this weekend. We need some wins in the conference. That's going to help our RPI. I'm paraphrasing here, but this was the message from Texas A&M's coach. We need to improve our RPI. Conference games are more important. We got to make sure we're ready to go for the conference game. We're not going to burn some arms in a midweek game. Let's be set up for the conference weekend. And I love this. They've canceled multiple midweek games now, Texas A&M. Yeah, it's a bad design, college baseball, with these midweek games. Start the season a week earlier if you want. Throw in an extra weekend series. You get three of the games back. You cancel 12 midweek games. Tack on a week or two. You get three or six back. Shorten the season by 6 to 9 games. I think it's a better product. I think everybody benefits. Sure, there may be no college baseball during the week. You're thinking, oh, boy, right? It's not good to be out of the spotlight. Well, I'll tell you, the NFL only plays on the weekends. I know they're adding Monday night, Thursday night. They play every night. But essentially, right, football is only on the weekends. They do just fine. So if you're not in the public eye for 5 days, you'll be okay. 4 days, Monday through Thursday. I've always been anti-divisions in college football, and I'm against. I may be in the very small minority. Most people probably disagree with me. Typically, I want more baseball. I want more games in my sports. But in this case, midweek baseball, to me, I don't get it. I sit here, I watch these games every week. You're throwing out the 10th arm on your staff. You're using seven different guys. You have no starting pitchers. It's silly to me. It's the opposite of what baseball is supposed to be. Baseball is supposed to be about a rotation. A guy goes out there, throws five innings, 100 pitches. You go to your bullpen. Enough of these bullpen games. I don't like it. Not a fan. Texas A&M, their coach, he's smart. He says, forget this. These conference games, the weekend games are more important. Why are we going to put ourselves in a tougher spot because of a midweek game? in a non, right, you play a non-conference team. Usually, if you're an SEC team, the non-conference games, you're playing teams that are below your level. You're the Gamecocks playing a USC Upstate. All due respect to Upstate. Now you're playing a Winthrop. Like, come on. The SEC games are more important. You got to make sure your pitching staff's ready. I'm not a fan of midweek games. So I like Texas A&M canceling their midweek game. Fine with me. I don't think it's great for the product, having midweek games. That's just me, though. All right, let's get to this. The NFL's releasing their schedule tonight. And the schedule, even though we already know the opponents, look, we'll have some takeaways tomorrow. You'll be able to determine how tough a schedule is. And then we got this video also from the Dolphins with Tua that kind of makes him look bad, underthrowing Tyreek Hill that Trent had referenced last hour. So it got me thinking, with the schedule coming out, with this video about Tua, because you know he's going to be in this list, the five quarterbacks facing the most pressure on them this NFL season, let's pull out a tasty top five.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the tasty top five.
I'm tasty.
Number five.
There are a lot of quarterbacks to choose from. I mean, we could do a list a lot larger than five. A lot of quarterbacks have pressure on them. I think any quarterback that moved this offseason, like Matt Ryan, right? You're being brought in to be the savior for Indianapolis. You have to be better than Carson Wentz. Vice versa. Carson Wentz comes into Washington. They're desperate to get back to the playoffs. You better be good. They just drafted a rookie quarterback. There's pressure on Sam Darnold. You got to try to keep your job. But I tried to narrow it down to the top five. Number five, I would say Dak Prescott. It's a bit of a cop-out because if you're the quarterback of the Cowboys, there's always going to be pressure on you. I don't care if it was Chad Hutchinson and Quincy Carter 20 years ago. You always have some of the most pressure on you. And the case for Dak, though, the reason why it's also increased is because the way last season ended. That was bad. Which, before I go any further, let me get to number four, Aaron Rodgers. Now, there's 2 points of pressure on Aaron Rodgers. Number one, we don't know how much longer this is going to last in Green Bay, and you now took away Devontae Adams, so he has very few weapons. But the reason why I think there's even more pressure on a Dak and an Aaron Rodgers, I put them 5-4, is because the way last season ended. It was embarrassing for both teams. And I feel like we don't talk about it enough, especially for the Cowboys. The Cowboys, probably because it's expected. Packers is viewed as more of a disappointment. But to lose like that first playoff game and to do it at home, and in the Cowboys' case, I mean, they choked away the game. And the Packers, right, you had the advantage of the elements, the weather. You have a California team coming to Lambeau, the frozen tundra, in the winter, and you couldn't do anything offensively. And you lose your first game with an extra week to prepare. And the Cowboys as well. So there's always going to be pressure on Dak Prescott or any Cowboy quarterback. And when you're as good as Rodgers, there's always going to be pressure on you as well. But the added elements are, number one, the way the season ended last year. Number two, you're waiting for the both quarterbacks, both teams, to finally break through. Rodgers, can you get back to a Super Bowl? Dak, can you actually win a few playoff games? They're 5-4 on my list. Number three, we talked about this earlier. I go Zach Wilson. I think of the second-year quarterbacks, Zach Wilson has the most pressure on him, even more than Trevor Lawrence. Because of the offseason for the Jets. It's almost unfair towards Zach Wilson, and I referenced this earlier. Like, Trevor Lawrence, he had a bad first year. If he has a bad second year, people are going to be calling him a bust if they aren't already. But the saving grace for Trevor is that, you know, Jacksonville just, they're not good. There's not much to be excited about. Even this offseason when they're spending money, any football fan knows, like, yeah, sure, they threw around a lot of money, but it's Zay Jones, Christian Kirk, Evan Ingram. Like, yeah, who cares? That's not a big help. Meanwhile, for Zach Wilson, when we talk about the Jets winning draft weekend, and we talk about the Jets doing this and doing that, and, oh, look at that move, and, oh, they got a pretty good roster. They're building something here. That only puts more pressure on the quarterback. Because when you hear all the offseason, you're hearing the Jets being hyped up. By the time we get to the season, you're thinking, oh, I've heard a lot about this Jets team. Right, they're supposed to be good. Everyone was talking about them all offseason. When realistically, I use this example for Clemson, South Carolina, right? If one team is on the 10th floor, the other one's on the first floor, and the team on the 10th floor, they come down a few levels, and the team on the first floor goes, there's still a wide gap. Same idea here. Like the Jets, yeah, sure, maybe they've improved a lot this offseason. They're still a long way from actually competing in the AFC. That conference is so tough. Do you think the Jets suddenly are close to the Buffalo Bills right now? No, they're nowhere close. They're still going to have a bad year. But all that's to say, of course, it comes back on the quarterback, plus second year for Zach Wilson. Wasn't great last year. They hope he's the future. And we know how this goes. If you can't get it done, they'll try to find somebody who can. And we're incredibly impatient nowadays, especially in New York. So for Zach Wilson, you feel you had a good offseason. You brought in some pieces. No more excuses. You got some interesting playmakers on the outside. They got some depth in the backfield. Second year for the quarterback, the coach, offensive coordinator. And if he still doesn't look the part, they don't have patience in New York, right? They'll make a move. or they'll start looking elsewhere. They moved on from Sam Darnold after 3 years. Zach Wilson needs to play well this year. The other second-year quarterbacks all have built-in excuses. Jaguars are terrible. Bears just brought in a new coach. They're bad. Trey Lance may not even see the field. Zach Wilson, that's the one team, the Jets, that we're hyping up, for whatever reason, this offseason. And that's going to lead to higher expectations. The top two quarterbacks, both are fighting for their jobs. That's why they have the most pressure on them. I put that pressure above trying to win a Super Bowl. A quarterback fighting for his job is more pressure than an Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers' job is safe. It's just more about his legacy and what we think of him. But at least he's going to have an opportunity to go play. That's not the case for the top two quarterbacks. I put Jalen Hurts number two, Tua number one. If neither one plays well this year, they're out of a job. And I don't know if they're getting another opportunity elsewhere as a starter. Jalen Hurts number two, because for the Eagles, look, you bring in A.J. Brown. They made some moves to bolster that offense. And even though Hurts led them to the playoffs last year, if you watch that playoff game, obviously, he's still got a long way to go. And the Eagles last year did not beat a single team with a winning record. They were kind of doing it with smoke and mirrors. You need to see more from Hurts. But more than that, the smoking gun in all this is the Eagles. They did that trade with the Saints. And what the Eagles did was they gave up some of their draft capital this year to get draft capital next year. And the theory is, right, because they're going to give Hurts. Now you bring in A.J. Brown. This is the audition for Hurts. And if you still don't like Jalen Hurts, they have all these picks next year that they can move up in a good quarterback draft class. So if you read between the lines, I think it makes it even stronger that the Eagles believe, like, yeah, this is kind of an audition for Jalen Hurts. And if he doesn't play well this year, Philadelphia is a lot like New York. They're not very patient either. They'll move on. I think Hurts is playing for his job this year. Tua's number one on my list of quarterbacks with the most pressure. Same idea. Playing for his job. He's been in the league a year longer. Hasn't looked as good. He's been banged up. Different coaches. Now you bring in a Mike McDaniel that's supposed to help the quarterback. You bring in Tyreek Hill. And the thing with the Dolphins, the big thing for Tua, it's a blessing and a curse. They're helping you out by putting pieces around you that could help you succeed. Problem is, they have seemingly all the other pieces other than the quarterback. So they've built up everything else on that team that if the quarterback's not good enough, the theory is we'll just replace the quarterback. We'll be ready to go. So, Tua, if you're not that guy, we'll go find that guy because all we're missing right now, it seems on paper, is the quarterback. And I don't think Jalen Hurts, I don't think Zach Wilson, all three of them are good enough to really hold on to those jobs. But Tua better be. We'll know real quick. By Halloween, you'll have a definitive answer on Tua and his future in Miami. Five quarterbacks with the most pressure. But again, you can make a case for probably half the league. Darnold has pressure. Matt Ryan has pressure. You can even make a case maybe Mac Jones made the playoffs year one. What do you do in year two? I mean, it's the NFL. It's the most important position in football. All these quarterbacks have pressure. But those are the five probably with the most. Now, I've been teasing this all afternoon. We have to pay off the tease. A compliment paid towards the Gamecocks. Here is a friend of the show, Josh Pate, talking about the SEC school with the most underrated environment. And yes, he chose the Gamecocks.
People don't talk about Williams-Brice Stadium nearly as much as they should. I've been up there for big games. I've been there when they played Georgia. I've been there when they played Alabama. And each time, I found myself standing on the field where I'm blessed enough to be able to watch the games from, looking around saying, if this existed in another conference, they would tout it like it's the end-all, be-all. Because when they wave those towels, when they play Sandstorm, when it's third down and three in Williams-Brice Stadium, you can't hear anything. If you close your eyes and you're in that stadium and you didn't know what your surroundings were, you would think you're at one of those other big venues. You would think you're at Kyle Field. You would think you're in Bryant-Denny Stadium. Because South Carolina fans more than do their part on game day to make that place a really, really intimidating environment.
That was a Josh Pate with kind words for the Gamecocks. Yeah, it's true when you compare it to the SEC, right? Like he said, you take it away from that conference, put it in another conference. Compared to the rest of the conference, it's hard to stand out. But compared to college football, pretty good environment going on there in Columbia. We'll wrap up your Thursday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up your Thursday on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online, charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio. your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And you can listen to the show live or on demand through the free app. Find the podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston to listen to the show on demand if you missed anything from today. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 10 different states and multiple countries on this Thursday as we get ready for the release of the NFL schedule tonight, plus a couple of potential elimination games in the NBA playoffs. The lines are short. A couple of two-point favorites tonight in the two games should be fun. This is going to make me sound really old. I was out of town for a few days, but I need a vacation from the vacation. It wasn't one of those relax on a beach type of vacations, I'll tell you that. Then I came back. I was traveling Monday. Tuesday, I had Citadel baseball. Last night, I had my pickup basketball. I'm looking forward to sitting down, maybe with some ice in the glass and some ice on the knees as well after last night, and just watching the NFL schedule come out and watching some basketball games. Just kick my feet up for the first time. It feels like I've been running here for a week. Looking forward to that. Whatever happens tonight, we'll break it down tomorrow on the show. In the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.